Jim McMillan, you are on the radio.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Well, Jim, let's talk about the streak. It is over for the Miami Heat. I'm wondering if you watched the game at all.
I did watch some of it. Actually, what I thought was funny was I was on the computer during the game, and my wife was watching the game. And that's unusual for the roles to be reversed when it comes to athletics here in the family, because I'm the athletic one as far as watching the sporting events. But she was very curious about this streak in terms of how Miami was doing, if they were going to break it. And I didn't watch the game because I did not think they were going to lose that game. I'm thinking, okay, Chicago has three starters out.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking this is not going to be much of a contest for Miami. And I was looking forward to the game against San Antonio Spurs because I thought that's where the streak was going to end.
So how close was your wife watching, and can you hear her cheerleading in the background?
Oh, yeah. I could hear that, and I could hear the TV. And I could hear, you know, I knew it was in Chicago. So when I heard the crowd going crazy and cheering, so I'm thinking, okay, Chicago's done something good or Miami's done something bad, you know. So I came in the room, and it was like 20-some seconds ago. And then the announcer said, I watched a couple of seconds, and the announcer said, well, I guess the streak will be broken.
Wow.
You know, at that point. And I said, oh, okay.
Yeah, that must have been a shocker in that department, huh?
Yeah, it was. I really didn't think Chicago had a chance of beating them. I mean, I know Chicago always plays them tough.
Right.
But that's when they have their full strength. And they were not. And so, to me, the key player, Noel, was out.
Yep.
And to me, he's the one that gives Miami the hardest time. You know,
did you see some of the highlights, by the way, as far as the physical play and what they were doing to LeBron?
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I thought that was very unusual in the sense that usually a person of his caliber or stature in terms of the game, they don't allow that kind of treatment of them. I thought that was unusual. He took it very well most of the time. I don't know most superstars would have reacted the way he did and been as calm as he was.
Although he did get a flagrant foul when he tried to run Boozer over, and Boozer was basically a brick wall. He barely moved.
No, he barely moved, and I don't know how much of a flagrant foul that was. It was a foul.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes I wonder about the way the game is officiated today. A lot of things have changed, but, you know, these fouls that they are calling flagrant fouls today would have been just a regular foul back when we played.
And these have been nothing in when you play.
You know,
I talked to Kobe Bryant about this 20 times. He wishes he played in your era because he wanted more physical plays. He says it's too soft now.
It is soft, and he would have been the same kind of player that he is now. He would have been that way, you know, back then too. Except I don't think he'd have come to the basket as much back then as he does now.
Oh, yeah. There have been a few guys with some elbows and some big bodies making sure he doesn't get through, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He would have paid the price. That, to me, that's why Michael Jordan developed a jump shot halfway through his career, because he kept coming in there on Detroit back in those days, and they were killing him. So he decided to develop a jump shot.
Yeah, you got to save your body.
Oh, yeah, because back then Detroit had a very physical team when they played anybody, especially when they played Jordan and the Bulls.
Yeah, no question. Okay, so how about – this is one thing Gail and I talked about, and I mentioned this to you earlier, that – the Miami Dolphins of 1972, the perfect team. They always come out. Usually it's Mercury Morris. Well, we're going to get the champagne out, and let's pop the corks, and let's celebrate because it's another perfect season that's still going to last forever for us. You guys don't work that way, do you?
No, we don't. I think, for one, most of us from that team, and I know I feel this way, I don't think it'll be broken. 33-game streak. I don't think it'll be broken. And I was very surprised that Miami came as close as they did in, you know, 27 games. I was surprised they got that close to us. I don't think today's teams, today's athletes are built to break that kind of streak. I don't think they can focus that long. I don't think they can give themselves that kind of dedication to do it for that long a period of time, with the fact that, you know, they're making so much money, they're thinking about their career and longevity, and if they get, you know, a broken toenail, you know, they're not going to play,
right.
Most of them. I'm not talking about guys like Kobe.
Right.
But most of the athletes, you know, they're thinking, okay, you know, I'm just not feeling it tonight. I'm going to take off tonight, that kind of thing. So I didn't think any team would get as close as Miami got to us.
That's fascinating, because I've been saying for a long time that money has totally changed the atmosphere in sports, because you really can't afford to get hurt or for the long haul now. It's more about, I got to save myself because there's too much money involved.
There is a lot of money involved, and I don't know what caused that type of attitude to come, whether it was the athletes that caused it first or the money that the athlete received. Cause them to be the way they are. I don't know, you know, it's like the chicken or the egg,
yeah.
Which came first. But I just didn't think the atmosphere of today's athletes was conducive to being focused long enough to break that type of streak.
So in that respect, maybe the 27 games is close to matching what you guys did because of the different era.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing that they were able to do that. Now, the only thing that I think about, and I've talked about this with someone else, that I think it would have hurt them in the long run to have broken our record. And the reason I say that, we had our record earlier in the season.
Yeah.
So when we lost, in January, and Milwaukee beat us, we had a half a season or more to go to regroup mentally, physically, emotionally, to focus on a championship. Now, if they'd have broken our streak, they would not have had time to rest their bodies emotionally, physically, mentally, to get ready for a run in the playoffs. They were already running in fifth gear,
yep,
to break our record. And that is a tremendous effort that they had to sustain over a long period of time just to get to 27. So to break our record, they'd have had to sustain it even longer. And when the record ended, or if they won the rest of the games for the rest of the season,
yep,
they had no other gear to go into for the playoffs.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. But I think one guy who might be smiling for sort of a strange reason is Pat Riley. How ironic he's involved, huh?
I don't know if I'm in his situation. I don't know how I would feel with this streak going that they had, because to me, now Miami has to refocus and think, this means nothing if we don't win the championship.
Exactly.
And that's what we felt when we finally lost, but we lost 1st of January. Yeah. So we had a lot of time to refocus to get ready for the run at the championship. And now, with them, this 27 games that they went in a row means nothing if they don't win the championship.
Absolutely. I'm always curious to get a thought when people love comparisons. How would the Heat do against the Los Angeles Lakers of 1971-72?
That would have been an interesting matchup, Ed, because it would have been somewhat of a nightmare in terms of a matchup for both teams.
Yeah,
they have the outside three guys who would have created some issues for us, but we had the big man in the middle that would have created unbelievable problems for them.
Yes, sir.
And not just for them, for any team today, because nobody has a center that could match up with them. And the thing is, our defense always forced everybody to the baseline, sideline, baseline, where we had the sideline and the baseline as a sixth man, and then we had Wilt.
Yeah.
So we ran them all to Wilt. Now, we took away the jump shot. We were not letting you shoot the jumper. So you had to go in, pass us on the baseline and go over Wilt to score. And I think that would have given us the advantage in a matchup with that team.
So how good would Happy Hairston have guarded LeBron?
Or would that be you? Why do you want to put it on me?
You want no part of that, huh?
I don't know. You know what? What would have helped me was the fact that I was not going to let him shoot the jumper.
Right.
So it would have made it easy for me. I'm going to make you one-dimensional. And that's what we did. We made players one-dimensional. You're going to have to go to the hole. Now, he loves to go to the hole, LeBron. Wade loves to go to the hole. But I don't believe you could score a whole game or a seven-game series against Wilt going to the basket.
Oh, so you're saying that you would have beaten the Heat in a seven-game series is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We would have beaten them.
Yeah, by the way, Jerry's two-pointers, a lot of them would have been three-pointers when you think about it.
Gale's two-pointers
Gale would
have been, you know.
Exactly.
I don't know how many points we averaged during that season or that 33 game, but we averaged a lot of points without shooting threes.
Yeah, Gale said it was about 124 during the streak.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing when you think. Of course, it was a different era, too. The game was played a little differently, but, I mean, that's a pretty high number.
Well, you know what? You can score more points today.
Well, but they don't tend to.
They don't tend to, and the league has made it easier for the offensive player by not allowing the defensive player to do what they were allowed to do when we played.
That's true.
You can't put that arm and force a guy a certain way and do all those things that we were able to do. So they made it easier on the offensive player today.
I totally agree with you. A couple other things from a local standpoint. We're the Clippers station. How do you see them from afar? You been following it much?
Oh, yes. You can't help but following the Clippers. And the thing that I guess I have not ulterior motives and follow the Clippers. I have somewhat of a reason for following the Clippers.
Yeah.
I used to play for the Braves, which became the Clippers.
Oh, that's true.
Okay.
I forgot about that.
And we had, I remember the Braves had, I can't remember how many game, 11-game winning streak. And that was the longest in the history of the Clippers. And then the Clippers broke that this year.
That's right. So you were there for that winning streak.
Oh, yes.
So you remember that one too, huh?
Yes, I remember that.
Oh, that's great. You're part of two great streaks.
It wasn't anything compared to the 33 game. But for us as a Braves organization, it was tremendous for us.
What kind of basketball fans were in Buffalo in those days?
Tremendous fans. We had tremendous fans in Buffalo. For one reason, there wasn't a lot to do in Buffalo during the winter. I mean, we got some serious amounts of snow there in Buffalo. Two things that was great in Buffalo was the Buffalo Sabres and the Buffalo Braves. The Sabres led the NHL in attendance, and we were averaging about 15,000
really?
A game in Buffalo. We had a good team. We had some very good players on that team.
So was that strictly a financial thing why they moved? It wasn't they weren't getting fans?
No, it wasn't that. It was a financial thing.
Wow.
They had sold the players, McAdoo and I and Tom McMillan. We were sold to the Knicks. They just broke up the team because they knew they were trying to move it.
Boy, if your name was McMillan, you were in trouble if you're in that town, huh? The other guy spelled his name wrong, though, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he did. He spelled it wrong.
So what do you think of the Clippers' chances right now? I mean, it's they've not been playing up to snuff in the last month or so.
I think the Clippers have not. I don't think they paid their dues yet. To win a championship and to contend for a championship, you have to go through a process.
Yeah.
You have to go through a process. You have to get the talent in place, and then you have to get the coach in place, and you have that. And next, you have to pay your dues in a playoff game. Last year, the Clippers started getting the guys the experience of being in the playoff to think like, well, we're not glad that just because we're here. We want to move on. And this year, they're going to make that run to the, I think a little further, depending on who they run up against now. They have a tough, the West Coast is a very tough area to come out of a team. They need, they're missing something. The Clippers are missing something. And I don't quite know what it is. If everybody was healthy, and I don't think everybody's healthy, they would have a better chance.
Yeah, they are missing something. And I maybe it is the fact of if everyone was 100%, we would see what they're all about. But they're not playing great defense. They're not stopping the three-point shot, and that's part of the problem.
They are not built for defense, though.
Yep.
They're just not built for defense.
It's
true. They don't have the personnel with the mindset. Their defense is going to be an offense.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
that's what they – and I think they're going to be better when Griffin gets better.
Yeah, well, in my opinion, he still needs to learn how to shoot a little more because he's got to be able to be a threat more than just the driving dunk.
Yes. It's almost like the Lakers with Howard.
Yep.
He's as long as he's been in the league, I think – he's going to have to get better, more of a threat. I mean, you say, how can a guy get better? He's scoring this number of points. He's getting this number of rebounds. But he could be better offensively.
Yeah, and also defensively. But a lot of that is his back, too. I mean, he's still recovering from the surgery. And you could see he's getting stronger every week. I mean, he's starting to run better. So.
He should not have, in my opinion, he should not have been playing at the beginning of the season. Not from that kind of surgery.
I agree with you.
You know, teams got pressure on them, too, and, you know, with the fans and everything. And then people are on his case that he's not doing what he used to do. Of course not. He's not healthy.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, what would Wilt say? I know that Kobe's only a couple of points away from passing him all time. If Wilt was around right now, what do you think he would say?
Well, I think Wilt would have a reason to – if he was around right now, he might decide to come back and play.
He doesn't want anybody to pass him.
No, and he had that kind of ego that was, hey, I can still play. And he one thing about Will, he always embellished most of the things he ever said and told you about, but you didn't know whether or not to question it because he's done so many amazing things. I mean, if a man scored 100 points in a game like he did, he could tell me anything he's going to do, and I would believe it. If he tells me he's coming back out of retirement. So he would probably decide to come back out of retirement if Kobe got that close.
You know what? He reminds me sort of like Jim Brown. They always kept saying Jim Brown was 50, and he says, you know, I'm thinking of coming back. And physically, they almost could.
Yeah, they almost could. Wilt always stayed in great shape, and his type of game, he could still come back and do certain things that he was able to do. He didn't have major injuries, you know, so that was a key factor for him. And even today, when you have a major injury, with the medical profession nowadays, some of those injuries they caused guys to retire back in my days.
Yeah, that's true.
And now they just fix you up, and you do like Adrian Peterson and the Vikings. You have an unbelievable injury, and you have an unbelievable recovery.
Well, the first thing I'm thinking of is Elgin Baylor. I mean, if they would have had what they do now then, I mean, Baylor would have – you may never have started for the Lakers because Elgin might have still been there.
I know. And the thing was, when Elgin was there and when he retired, he could still play. That was the most amazing thing because I used to have to guard him every day in practice. So he could still play. The issue for Elgin, I think, was the Lakers were trying to go in a different direction offensively.
Yeah.
And Elgin, even when he was healthy, didn't play that style of ball. He was never fast break, north-south type player.
Right.
He was half court. You give him half. He was like a Carmelo Anthony. Well, no, let's change that. Carmelo Anthony was like he was.
Carmelo would love to have been Elgin.
Yes, that's why I had to change it. That's why I had to change
No,
it
I understand.
Up.
By the way, he never seemed to be comfortable once you guys picked up Wilt. Am I reading it correctly?
Well, now, you know, I was not there when Wilt first came.
Yeah, but you, so, I mean, but even in practice and all that, he was never, even though he was older, he was never the Elgin Baylor I remembered when Wilt was there. He had to change his game somewhat.
He did have to change his game because Wilt occupied that space down there.
Yep.
You know, the Elgin used to, he used to roam that area down there. And he could shoot it from the outside, and he could take you off the dribble. But he loved posting you up because he was so much stronger than the other forwards, and he could elevate. But when Wilt was there, he had to pick, he had to say, okay, Wilt's on the right side. I guess I'm going to have to go to the left side.
Yeah.
You know, so he had to keep an eye on what side Wilt was on.
Yeah, I've always been the king of the Elgin Baylor fan club, and I try to let people know that never saw him play in his prime. They just don't get how unbelievable he was and so far ahead of his time.
He was so far ahead of his time. I like some of the younger generation when they start talking about one day at the barbershop, the guy was asking me, look, Jim, we put together our top five all-time NBA players, and we want to see what you think of. And they started naming the guys. And I said, whoa. You guys got five guys. First of all, you can't just limit it to five.
Right.
All-time. And I said, in order to put a team together, you have to have two teams. I said, you have to have a pre-ESPN and a post-ESPN team.
That's true.
And I said, because they got guys, you don't even have Oscar Robertson on your team. They said, well, I said, this guy averaged a triple-double in the season. Well, yeah, I guess. I said, you got so many guys back then that none of you young guys have ever seen. How can you just not put Oscar or Jerry West or, you know, these guys, how can you not have them on your team when you put in a top five all time?
Wow. I totally agree with you. You imagine if Oscar averaged a triple-double now, that guy would be on the cover of Sports Illustrated every week.
Well, a guy gets a triple-double in one game, he gets a big article in the paper.
That's what I mean.
So, you know, you think about Wilt. The season he averaged 50 points and, what, 25 rebounds?
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, I don't know how many guys, not many have gotten 25 in one game.
I just know Wilt would have destroyed the centers of today.
He would have destroyed. It wouldn't have even been close. My son once, he was a big Shaq fan.
Yeah.
And we used to watch the game, and he was talking about Shaq. He asked me, how would Shaq do against Wilt? I said, Wilt would have killed him.
Totally.
He said, how could that happen, Pops? Because Shaq is strong. I said, you have not seen strong until you've seen Wilt. And I say, first of all, Wilt would have gotten 50 points on Shaq. I say, no, let me change that. He wouldn't have gotten 50 points on Shaq because Shaq would have fouled out. I say, Shaq is a great ball player, but you guys have not seen Wilt.
Yeah, it was a totally different world with him. He was such a great athlete. He could do almost anything he wanted to.
Well, look at Jerry West. I mean, the guy was just unbelievable. And he's very humble when he played, very competitive. I don't think, you know, you talked about the team against Miami, playing against Miami, and who's going to guard LeBron. Which one of those guys going to get on Jerry West?
Good luck. That's all I could say. How awesome is it, the amount of unbelievable players that you played with, though, Jim?
Yeah, that team that Laker team was unreal because and the guy that you don't hear a lot about that I think was a key to that winning streak in that season was Gale Goodrich. Not that Jerry West and Will, you know, weren't great ball players, but Gale had the unconscious ability to go out there every night, regardless of who he was playing against, how good the team was, how bad the team was, and still trying to score 40.
Yeah.
And you needed that to sustain a 33-game win streak. You needed at least one person to not to have an off night.
And how that little guy did it all the time. He didn't care who was down low. He went up there.
And the thing about Gale that was so amazing, he's probably one of the most non-athletic guys that I have ever seen to play pro ball.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have a body for a professional basketball player. He's not tall. He wasn't quick. But, boy, was he good.
On a great shot. I used to love – I loved Gale when he was at UCLA. That's how far back I go. And did you guys call him Stumpy in practice or no?
Yes, they called him Stumpy. I never called him Stumpy. I just called him, you know, not because I didn't like the name or anything, but I always called him Gale. You know, I never called him that. But I remember him from UCLA days. One of his teammates back then, the guy who was their center in that undefeated season, Fred Slaughter, came to Columbia University as a graduate student. He was in law school at Columbia University when I came in as a freshman, and he became our graduate assistant coach. So he helped us, and you know, back then freshmen couldn't play varsity.
Yeah.
So he worked with the team and worked with us and worked with us the sophomore year. So I had a couple years. I got to know him, you know, at Columbia because he was helping the team out. And, of course, I saw that most of the games during that season when they won the championship in college.
Yeah, well, that was a fantastic team with Walt Hazard.
Walt Hazard and Gale and Keith and Fred Slaughter. I don't know who the fifth starter was. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's going too far back for me. Well, this 5 minutes turned into 25 minutes. I enjoyed every second of it, Jim. You're great.
Thank you, Terry.
And we'll talk again down the road. Look forward to speaking with you, all right?
Well, we'll talk the next time a team comes into the neighborhood of breaking our record.
Oh, that means we'll never talk.
Another 40 years. 41 years.
I'll call you.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim. All the best to you back there.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.